the Sunday after September 11th, 2001, a woman came to the church in Rutland, Vermont, where I was serving, who had never been there before. She needed to talk urgently about something that had happened a long time ago. She had been raped many years previously, and the trauma our nation was experiencing shook loose the hard-packed earth in which this old trauma had been buried. And like an undead creature from a horror movie, it clawed its way to the surface. Her young and inexperienced minister was not familiar with that phenomenon, although fortunately prepared to listen. Now I recognize how common that is, that the traumas that we have buried or thought we dealt with at the time, but that still have some hold on us, reemerge when reminded, when stirred. It makes me wonder how much we as a country reenact the traumas that we have never fully processed. I wonder how much humanity as a whole has to live and relive bad experiences that we've never fully acknowledged. It seems we're called to some kind of balance, some reckoning with the past, so that we neither feel that we are our worst moments and nothing but our worst moments, nor shun them. But can we instead house them like wayfarers at a guest house? Last week, I shared Frank Ostasevsky's invitation, welcome everything, push away nothing. And this next invitation that we're talking about today has a lot of similarities with it. Bring your whole self to the experience. But I think what it asks us to do is to turn around the same dynamic, to ask, what of ourselves will we bring to whatever encounters we have? And it invites us, bring everything, leave nothing out. As with last week's, the key is to welcome all aspects, this time, of ourselves. It may sound fatalistic, but I think it helps to remember that we do bring our whole selves with us wherever we go, whether we intend to or not. The only choice we have is whether we will acknowledge everything about ourselves or we'll try to stuff something down out of sight, out of awareness. That's a choice that we hope we won't take and that he invites us not to take. Ostasevsky says, imagine that, and I'm paraphrasing here, imagine that you could you printed on a portrait of yourself on stiff cardboard. A portrait not just of your face or your full length of your body, but all the aspects of your personality, the things that are part of you but invisible. Imagine you put that all on stiff cardboard and had it cut into a jigsaw puzzle. And there you had this multi-dimensional, thousand-piece jigsaw puzzle. As you started to put it together, you'd start with maybe familiar things. There's my ear, there's my hair, there's something I know about myself. And then you would come to things that you kind of wished weren't there. Oh, that's a fear that I wish I didn't have. That's a moment I really wish I could forget. And if we left those all out, then when we finished with 1,000 pieces, we wouldn't have the whole picture. As he says, we all want to present ourselves well. There are parts of ourselves we like better. There are memories we have, experiences, things we've done that we'd rather present to the world. But he has found in his work in hospice that gave rise to these 5 invitations that it's often the things that he would rather not acknowledge about himself that help him to connect to people in genuine ways. some suffering that he has undergone, say, or even imposed on others, allows him to meet people with compassion, with reality, instead of with fear or avoidance or pity. Bring your whole self to the experience. Rumi is addressing aspects of ourselves, it seems to me, joy, of course, but also a meanness, the dark thought, the shame, the malice, not just from others, but from within. And he declares with joyful faith that everything about us has some gift to bring. Again, the alternative is to deny these parts of ourselves, and surely that is worse, because whatever they may be, they inform who we are now. They have helped us to become the people we are, and they are guides. Without them, we're traveling with only a partial map, only parts of the puzzle. And there's the great compassion of that image of the guest house. These things are real, but they're also not the core of who we are. They pass through, just as happier feelings and thoughts do. As A.H. Almas says, our souls, our consciousness, are taking that form at that time for a reason we perhaps don't understand yet. Can we just accept them as guests, not as permanent installations, but deserving of our honor? Can we trust that everything that we have done and felt and thought really has something to teach us? Can we trust that? What Ostasevsky is asking us, what Rumi is encouraging us, is to be real, to feel all there is to feel and experience all that happens to us. And isn't that one of our ideals as members of this liberal religion? To say, this is it, this life, let us be here. Let us arrive here fully, as we say often when we begin our service together. Let us be here fully. This is what we have. Now, like Ostasevsky, I've spent the time in the room of somebody who is close to death. Perhaps you have as well. Even if you have not, I know for certain you have been in the space with a person who is frightened, who is suffering. And I invite you to think what it means at that time to bring your whole self, your doubt, your self-doubt, your fear, your wish to just be somewhere else and pretend this isn't happening. There you are. What I find is when I can do that, I stop pretending. I can really be present. And I'm thinking, although none of us has been on our deathbed yet, probably. At least it turned out we weren't. We know a lot about how it is from the other side. What does it mean to be in pain, to be in fear, and bring our whole selves to that experience? Every day, every moment, we have an opportunity to practice, to be able to embrace everything that blows through us, disowning nothing. And then, isn't that what we want from the people who come to us when we are in that state of need? We want them to acknowledge everything that they are, so that when we try to connect with them, we don't meet a shield, but the only thing that they have to offer, the thing that no one else can offer, that person as they really are. Can we do that for each other? To just meet each other with the fullness of ourselves. It is such a gift when we have these true encounters. Is there anybody in your life with whom you can consistently be who you are and trust that they are bringing all of themselves? It is a true gift. It's rare, but we can get better at it. And when we experience that, when we have that moment of this person has been candid with us, vulnerable with us, and we felt able to do that as well, well, in that moment we know how hungry we are for real connection. It might be frightening too, but again, it gets less so. It is so hard to do this corporately, maybe even harder than it is to do individually. And I was reminded of this just this morning when I learned of a very painful experience that's going on in our Unitarian Universalist Association. The UUA's Board of Trustees is meeting right now. They do periodically in Boston. And one of their members, Christina Rivera, has done a great service to our movement, to our religion, by over the last couple years pointing out incidences of racism, ways that the unconscious privileging of white experience plays out, that she notices as a person of color. Really helped us, she's been one of many people to help us to do some soul searching about that. Well, she is on the board. Her child is on the General Assembly Planning Committee for the UUA, and a letter came to that child at the UUA and fortunately was intercepted by UUA staff that was attacking, racist, too appalling in its nature for President Susan Frederick Gray, who shared about it to all of us, to share the details. But as I say, fortunately, not delivered to the person for whom it was intended. If you would like to think and hope that it wasn't from a Unitarian Universalist, I'm afraid we have to think again. Who knows who the Board of Trustees is or cares or that they're meeting now or knows what the General Assembly Planning Committee is? No. This was somebody within our movement who saw fit to send this anonymously to a person of color. Facing this corporately is not easy to say, is this part of who we are? Yes. Yes, it is. There's no tolerable alternative to acknowledging that. Denying it, hiding it, moving quickly on before we've dealt with it, all do more harm than just saying, here this is. And I'm grateful for the leadership of President Susan Frederick Gray and the board and Christina Rivera herself and others who have said, we're going to keep acknowledging this and deal with this. As a nation too, our refusal to acknowledge the whole of who we have been, what we have done, our fear of it or our shame of it. Whom do we think we are concealing it from? Only ourselves. If I have an article of faith, it is that it's always better to know reality. That doesn't mean I always face it, but I believe that it is always better. And as a religious movement, we pride ourselves on our realism, our willingness to face facts, to leave nothing of ourselves at the threshold, to accept reality as it is and not seek comfort in illusion. And so we've built a religion in which we can boldly, even proudly proclaim, I'm an atheist. We can say, I support LGBT rights. Not too many religious communities in which you can say that from the pulpit. Or that we are a home and a heritage for heretics. That's not a dirty word for us. We're very bold about those things, but can we acknowledge the reality that we have harbored a comfortable racism that sustains the status quo? despite all our best intentions and our noble deeds. If we can, then we'll grow, then we'll be whole. You know, there are a lot of rebels in our past that we now enshrine. So let us remember, they were reviled at the time. Theodore Parker, whose questioning of the divinity of Jesus put him on the fringe in the first half of the 19th century and caused him to be shunned by his colleagues. Now he is all but canonized, if Unitarian Universalists did that kind of thing. So now we have St. Theodore, but then, who is our Parker now? And how are we treating them? The women who pursued ordination and took calls in lonely outposts of the West, who served often unacknowledged and unsupported except by each other, congregations like the one in Palo Alto, California. We hail them now. We call them the prophetic sisterhood. But that's not what they were called by the American Unitarian Association, as it was then called. The American Unitarian Association's president, Samuel Atkins Elliott. He dismissed them, he disregarded them, he wished they would just go away. So who are our prophets today? Who is our Samuel Atkins Elliott? And with which one do we want to ally ourselves? What I love about this invitation and Rumi's words and Stephen's example is the permission to bring our whole selves to the experience of being alive, to acknowledge our imperfections, fears, doubts, mistakes, regrets, as well as the more welcome guests. You know, and sometimes what's unwelcome can be surprising. If you're in a sick room or at a deathbed, maybe levity and joy feel like unwelcome guests. But there they are, and they're welcome too. It reminds me of another memory of mine from that Sunday after the grim Tuesday of 9/11. We'd had a vigil on the Tuesday night, of course, and then our Sunday service was also trying to come to terms with the loss and shock of that day and the fear of what was to come next. And at the equivalent in Rutland, Vermont, of caring and sharing, an elderly member of our congregation stood up and said, "On Tuesday, my first great-grandchild was born." And we burst into applause and burst into tears. And I told her, make sure this child knows as he grows up and learns what the anniversary of his birth means to the world, that we were so happy he was born on that day. We were so happy there was something to rejoice in out of that dreadful day. It all belongs, everything that happens to us, everything that we have been and felt, it all belongs. And so I'll close with another thought of Frank Ostasevsky's. He wants us to remember in this quest for wholeness. Wholeness does not mean perfection. This is important, I think, because this is me on the page. So often we talk about religion, particularly, as if it's a quest for perfection. You know, you're going to go to heaven, you're going to reach nirvana, you're going to become a perfect person. He says, wholeness does not mean perfection. It means no part left out. Can we welcome as honorable guests every part of ourselves? If we do, maybe we can help make this world a little more healed, a little more whole. Blessed be.